Welcome to another MHU.com lecture series event. Very exciting one tonight, something we've not done in the past. Our title is Selling to the Residents, an option most owners do not know is on the table. And with me from ROC USA is Paul Bradley, president of the company, and Angela Romeo, National Acquisitions Manager. So are you both with us tonight?
Yes, indeed.
I am.
Good evening.
Well, great. Well, we're excited to have you. People are probably aware. They've listened to my podcast and seen the articles on the property we've recently sold to the residents through ROC in North Lamar down in Austin. But that's only the tip of the iceberg of all the good work you guys do as far as making residents in these communities not only owners of their homes, but owners of the land underneath as well. So we wanted to base this lecture series to give owners the ability to understand how this option works, and if this is an option for them, and then understand the complete process. So I thought we'd start off with just talking about the history of ROC USA. So where did the whole idea come from? How did ROC USA come to be?
Great, Frank. Well, ROC USA started in 2008, but our history stems back to 1984, where the first group of homeowners in Meredith, New Hampshire, purchased the land under their homes in what's now the Meredith Center Cooperative. So some 36, 37 years ago, these 13 homeowners lived in a mobile home park, and the elderly owners needed to sell the asset in order for him to move into the nursing home. And so one by one, those homeowners went down to a local bank, and one by one, they were told, you don't have any equity for a down payment. You don't have any experience in mobile home park operations. We can't finance the community for you. And thankfully, a graduate student of a professor who's actually still on our board of directors came to school one day and said, I have a friend whose brother lives in a mobile home park and it's being sold and they want to buy it, but they don't have the money. And he said, well, why don't they form a co-op? Why don't they borrow the money from the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund and buy the land as a cooperative? And so lo and behold, 1984, the Sisters of Mercy loaned the New Hampshire Community Loan Fund $38,000, and those 13 homeowners became the proud owners of a mobile home park. And that kicked off really a wave of purchases in New Hampshire. And I came on in October of 1988, and began working with those cooperatives and began helping homeowners in mobile home parks form co-ops and purchase their communities, and was very content doing that in the state of New Hampshire all the way through the early 2000s. And really about 2005, 2006, it became very obvious that there was an opportunity to scale the work across the country. We were getting phone calls from nonprofits, from homeowners, from community operators around the country interested in doing what we'd been doing in New Hampshire, helping homeowners buy the land as a co-op. And so I spent 2 years writing a business plan, raising capital, building a team, and we launched ROC USA in 2008 to do just that, to scale this ownership model across the country.
All right, very good. And now, obviously, that's a concept that is very much supported by a lot of people on the federal and the state and the county city level. But yet there are some states that the concept currently through ROC USA you can't do. Which states are you doing at this point? Which ones are you not? Just so we can clarify that for everybody.
You bet, Frank. We're coast to coast and all points in between. So all the states of New England, New York, Delaware, North Carolina, Texas, and then moving into the Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Utah, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Washington, and Oregon, and California now.
Gotcha. Okay, and let's talk for a minute on the process. It's a fascinating process you all have put together on this. Can you go over with people how the process works in pretty granular detail, because it's fairly clever. So how does it work?
Right.
Yeah,
let's have Angela go to work here.
Thanks, Paul. So the first step, Frank, really is a park owner giving either Rock USA directly a call or one of our affiliates. So we pick up the phone, and 9 out of 10 times, a park owner is just kind of curious about what happens. So the first thing that we do is we talk to the park owner to see if the community fits in our buy box, meaning, is it in a state that we're operating in? Is it at least 25 sites? We get an understanding of the community. Is it city water, city sewer, private utilities? What is the occupancy? And we go to town kind of doing an evaluation on what we think the value of the property is. So we'll do that at Rock USA. And we use that to negotiate a price up front with a park owner before we ever engage the residents. So I think that is one of the pieces that park owners are really curious about, is at what point do we talk to their residents? And we just want them to know we're never engaging the residents without their permission. And 9 out of 10 times, we do not engage the residents until we have an agreed upon price up front between Rock USA or its affiliate and the park owner. Once we have that price agreed upon, we will go under contract. And that contract is assignable to a resident corporation. It is that contract that gives us the green light to then finally go interact with the residents. And so the first step after we're under contract is we ask the park owner to send out a letter to his or her residents, just letting them know that he is interested in selling the community, that he'd like to give the residents an opportunity to purchase it before it goes on the open market, and that the residents will be hearing from an organization called Rock USA. That ensures that we are not blindsiding the residents. They know that we have permission to be on site. They know that the park owner, understands that we're going to be there and has given permission. So it really makes the entire interaction a lot smoother. So once that letter goes out from the park owner, we try to time it so that within a day or two maximum, our staff is on site going door to door, delivering a notice to the residents, inviting them to what we call a first resident meeting. And it's important that we get the residents all in the same room, as many of them as possible at least, so that they can hear the same message at the same time. And it's at that first resident meeting that we say, and we let them know, hey, this isn't made up, this is real. It's happened at this point, I want to say 262 other times nationwide, and that the owner is curious if you want to look into this process. It's really important at that time that we don't ask them to buy the park. We're really asking them, is this something that you want to look into? Is this something that you want to research? And if so, we're here to walk you through every step of the process. That is the role that we play. So either at that meeting or within a couple of days, the residents will kind of come together and they'll make a decision. Yes, we want to move forward collectively to research the viability of this, or no, thank you for the opportunity, but we would rather pass. So I would say I've only seen residents a handful of times decide not to move forward and look at the opportunity. So more often than not, the residents are going to proceed forward, and we let the park owner know, like, we're moving ahead, and we keep the park owner involved in all of the communication. We're pretty transparent about it. The next step is that we help the residents form a corporation, just like any other business owner out there. And then each household has an opportunity to join that corporation so that they can have a voice and a vote throughout the process. After they've joined, they elect a board of directors, usually 5 to 7 people, who represent them as residents and as neighbors moving forward. And it's that board of directors that is going to work closely with us over the next, 60, 90, 120 days to do all of the due diligence, to apply for financing, to create a corporate structure so that the corporation has bylaws and the community has rules, and that the corporation has policies on how to enforce the rules or how to collect the rent. So we work with them on really creating that corporate framework from beginning to end. We walk them through the due diligence phase, and then we walk them through applying for financing. Rock USA Capital brings a couple of unique products to the table to allow all of this to happen. The number one product that allows this to happen is a forgivable pre-development loan. So these residents, we're not asking them to come up with their own money out of pocket to fund the engineers, the attorneys, or anything like that. Rock USA Capital will provide the corporation with a forgivable pre-development loan so that when it does come time for the residents to make the ultimate decision as to whether to buy the park or not, they're making an educated decision, that they know what the water and sewer infrastructure looks like, what their reserves are going to have to be on an annual basis, when they should plan to replace, you know, a septic system or electrical pedestals. So we provide a forgivable pre-development loan, and if the deal gets to the closing table, it gets wrapped up into the acquisition financing. And if for whatever reason it does not make it to the closing table, the loan is simply forgiven. It's the cost of doing business so that everybody, the lender, the borrower, everybody makes sure that they know what they're getting themselves into. So once the residents take assignment of the contract, it really is like any other commercial transaction. We can get due diligence done oftentimes in 60 days. Sometimes if a phase two is necessary or something like that, we'll need an extension. I think in North Lamar, we wrapped it up in 60 days pretty easily. We usually request another 30 days for financing, and residents request financing from any lender, but more often than not, Rock USA Capital is going to be the lender on that, on the acquisition itself, and I'll let Paul talk a little bit later about how that financing is put together. And we get to the closing table. So that's pretty much how the transaction works from the moment a seller reaches out to me until we get to the closing table. And yeah, that's pretty much what that looks like.
Okay, Paul. So how does the financing work? I know you've got that very well constructed. How does that work?
Yeah, let me also just say, in addition to emphasize a point Angela just made, we're about ready to post a new seller testimonial from a community that was acquired by the homeowners up in Montana, and he actually reports that the closing, the due diligence and closing process probably was easier with a cooperative buyer than it would be what he assumed with a third party investor buyer. So there are seller testimonials for any operators interested in hearing from a community operator. There's one right on our website today, rockusa.org. The financing is specially tailored. No surprise there, Frank. There's not a market for cooperative financing as a general rule. So we've developed our own community development financial institution. We're certified by the U.S. Department of Treasury as a CDFI, Community Development Financial Institution. And these are institutions, there are about 1,200 or so in the country, but this one is the only one that's focused entirely on this asset class and this this borrower group. So we've raised capital, a balance sheet in Rock USA Capital. That's, you know, is what you would expect, a significant amount of equity and a fair bit of debt that we've then we use to finance resident-owned communities. The product that we offer on the acquisition side is 110 LTV first mortgage to the resident corporation. Your listeners are going to say, where can I find some of that, right? Not only are you not coming up with equity in the deal, you're actually over-leveraging the property. It's not available to your investor listeners. However, it is available to resident-owned communities that have the support of a technical assistance provider in Rock USA Network and are eligible for you know, as a cooperative borrowing from Rock USA Capital. It's a 110 LTV because it has to cover all of the acquisition price plus reserves and closing costs. You know, therefore, it's not a marketable product in the private marketplace. And it is, you know, a nonprofit product available specifically to these low-income community groups. And what we do with that financing is we provide that first mortgage. If we have to put it on a warehouse line, we do. For lender types in the audience, you know, we're leveraging that loan by selling off senior participations in that to institutional investors. We have brand name banks and insurance companies. Happy to name, you know, we have obviously Bank of America and Prudential and MetLife and National Cooperative Bank, all of whom are investors and participants in Rock USA capital transactions, and many, many more across the country. So we leverage that loan by selling off a senior participation, and we retain the B tranche or subordinate tranche. And that's really our role as a community development financial institution, is to retain the first loss position, service that loan on behalf of the senior participant investors, and ensure that the loan is well serviced and well managed. We also do improvements financing. So when a transaction Angela and our local affiliates are working on has upfront significant infrastructure requirements, obviously it's a part of the capital improvements plan, and there is financing available for those improvements when they're needed up front. If not, they are reserved over time through that capital improvements plan and from operating cash flow. So those are the three basic products: forgivable due diligence or pre-development, acquisition financing, and improvement financing.
Gotcha. Okay, Paul, let's talk about some success stories of ROC, and perhaps the one that's nearest and dearest to our heart was the one that just recently transpired with the property known as North Lamar down in Austin. So let me give people some background on the property on the front end, and then you can also add in there color commentary of how you saw from your perspective. We bought that property, I can't remember the year, and when we bought it, it was in extremely poor condition. So we proceeded to go in, we repaved the roads, redid the entry, huge amount of cleanup, I think 20 dumpster loads, so roll-off dumpster loads of debris. Went in at no cost to residents, painted a whole lot of homes, a whole lot of fences, built fences back, built steps back, all kinds of items. At the same time, we raised rents, we installed water meters, we had residents pay their own water and sewer. We got into some political hot water along the way, almost from the get-go, because the one city councilman in particular did not like the idea, regardless of what all we did with the property. The very act of raising the rents, he found to be abhorrent. But, you know, there's no rent control law in Texas. We managed around that. Went on, but even from nearly the beginning, the residents wanted to buy the property. And I didn't look through my emails, but I'm pretty confident that it was probably within the first 6 months or so that the residents said, "Can we buy this thing someday?" And I'm pretty confident from the beginning we said, "Yeah, if you can ever put it together, sure." And I think I even talked to you back at that time. Of course, the property needed a lot of work to get into institutional grade format that a lender would loan on it. But when we bought it, it would not have met the qualifications. It was really poor condition. So we kind of saw ourselves, I guess, at the end of the movie as being kind of the catalyst to get the people what they wanted, which is they wanted to own it, but it wasn't in a condition to be financed. So we kind of made it into the condition it would be financed, got the rents raised to the level in which it would be self-supportive, and then sold to them. So to us, it kind of was a Disney ending, since it's exactly what they wanted. It was the easiest choice for us because we didn't want any more political hardship in Austin. If we'd sold that to any other party besides the homeowners, surely we would have been greatly, greatly criticized and condemned for that. But you know, we found that to be an ideal ending to a fairly lengthy movie. So we consider it a success story because, number one, you know, we sold it at a good price. Number two, we didn't get any pushback from any local governmental agency. And believe me, in Austin, it's very common to have all kinds of issues on almost anything potentially real estate related there. So we found it to be a win-win. At the end of the movie, residents were happy, we were happy, and so to us, a total win-win format. Not really certain why, and maybe Paul, you could tell me, or Angela, some community owners are seemingly hostile to the idea of selling to the residents, but I've never been able to figure out why that would be. Because if you're going to sell to any party, the residents to me would be a more logical fit than some outsider who doesn't know the property, who's not already a stakeholder in the property. So I'm confused why, you know, you always have some old timers who say, oh gosh, you know, I don't want to do that resident owned stuff. But to me, it's a no brainer. If the property meets the profile, which we'll go over here in a minute, and the residents want to do it, I don't know why you wouldn't do that. So that's my perspective on North Lamar. It was a Disney ending. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah. Well, I'll say a couple things, Frank, and then hand it to Angela, who worked that transaction, as you know, directly. So, one, you know, I think, look, to some people, we and the homeowners are an unfamiliar counterparty for a commercial transaction. So, you know, this program, as you framed it, you know, this is a new concept for a lot of folks, and we recognize that, and that's why we're very careful to explain the process. And you know, we'll talk as much or as little as anyone wants through a transaction and all the examples. But I get that it's unfamiliar to people. And you know, another commercial investor is a familiar counterparty, although you know, maybe not that specific buyer. You went one step further. I remember our early phone call on North Lamar. You actually said to the homeowners that you will entertain a sale to them if they work with Rock USA, because you wanted somebody on the resident purchase side that knew what they were doing, something to that effect.
That is exactly correct, Paul. That is exactly true.
Yeah. So I mean, and of course, we've worked with three purchases with you, three successful purchases in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and now Texas, which we're delighted with, and hope to complete more, Frank. So that's really sets it up. And of course, for the listeners to understand, we're not brokers. Rock USA is not a brokerage. We're not a buyer broker, or certainly not a seller broker. We come at this as technical assistance providers and lenders to a to-be-formed resident corporation. If you are a direct selling, that's fine. If you have engaged a broker, that's fine too. That's on your side of the transaction. But Rock USA brings no added cost to the seller, any type of brokerage. Our fees are all paid on the buyer side of the equation. So with that said, let's Angela, I'll let you walk through the specifics in North Lamar.
Thank you. So yeah, Frank and Dave did a great job of queuing North Lamar up to be an eventual sale to the residents by saying, absolutely, we'll sell to you if you work with Rock USA. So that was, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, and the residents immediately reached out to Rock USA and said, we want to buy our park. Can you guys help us? And one of the things that is really unique about Rock USA is that we only enter a market when we have a certified technical assistance provider or a certified Rock USA affiliate in that market. That affiliate provides the local boots on the ground, face-to-face interaction at both the owner level, but also, most importantly, the resident level. We can't expect these residents to suddenly all come together and be able to own and operate a manufactured housing park and navigate their way through the transaction collectively if they've never done it before. So that's the role of the affiliate. And Rock USA was getting ready to officially certify the Texas-based affiliate, known as CHEA, in early of this year, 2020. So at the beginning of the year, I reached out to Frank and said, hey, Frank, we're ready to move forward on North Lamar if it is for sale. And Frank's response is, well, everything's always for sale if the price is right. And it lined up with the fact that it was going on the market anyways. So we reached out to the residents and said, you know what, Rock USA is entering Texas. We're ready to work with all of you. They had a board of directors that had been organized for the past 5 or 6 years anyways. So there was an organized framework for Rock USA to kind of step into and be able to work hand in hand with the board of directors. And because this had been something that they had wanted so passionately for the past number of years, the community unanimously voted to submit an offer to Frank and Dave. And that's what we did. We submitted an offer on behalf of the residents. It was accepted. we went under contract, and we immediately began working with the board to go ahead and execute the due diligence. All of this happened, and then COVID-19 hit, and we were still able to get all of our due diligence done according to the contract. We were able to secure financing through Rock USA Capital. We also secured some subordinate financing as well. And the residents, they were able to vote in a rent increase. I believe they voted in a $30 rent increase in order to purchase the community. And it was something that they were, you know, absolutely willing to take on to ensure that they could control the land under their homes moving forward. So that's something we hear quite often is, you know, what is this going to cost the residents? It's a transaction by transaction case that we need to look at. In the case of Austin is a really hot market. You know, rents needed to go up in order for the residents to support the purchase price, but they willingly took that on in order to secure their rent long term. And so, like you said, Frank, it's a Disney ending. It's something that you held to your word. You said, absolutely, I'll sell to the residents. And fast forward 5 or 6 years, they became the second resident-owned community in the state of Texas, which is pretty fabulous. And the first resident-owned community in a city capital, which is a little unique to us. We're really excited to get one that is in such a hot metro area to preserve that long-term affordable housing for families who need it most in that area.
And guys, was there anyone who was not a winner in that transaction? And was that not the most pure win-win-win-win-win? Because we were happy as seller, residents were happy as buyer, city was happy that they became owners, you guys were happy that it got done, lenders were happy they were able to help. I mean, was it not just an endless chain of win-win in that transaction?
Absolutely. This was a win-win across the board. And I think most resident-owned community transactions are. The residents, they have to be competitive in their purchase price, and they tend to be competitive. So you guys walked away with a really good selling price. The residents, you know, have secured that housing in perpetuity, and the city has also been able to secure affordable housing in an area that is really hard to do so. So everybody won in this scenario. As I feel like most do in resident-owned purchases.
Agreed. So let's talk for a minute about what can go wrong in these transactions and how the seller can help mitigate those from happening. So on the deals that derail, you know, what are the most common things that derail the deal? And then what can the seller do to help make sure it does not derail?
Well, I'll step in and just say, I'll step in and say two things, Frank, and both just come back to let's just have an honest upfront discussion about the reality. Life's too complicated to not deal with reality here. So let's just have an upfront conversation about where the financials stand in the community and the infrastructure. You know, if you're sitting on Orangeburg Pipe, let's just all know that up front and not futz around with it, 70 days into the transaction. And if the receivables are fudged, then let's just know that up front. I can cite in both of those situations, we've experienced that, and that's just when things get really difficult and things can fall apart. They haven't always, but they can. And so let's just all be real up front and know what we're dealing with and then solve for that.
I would agree. Absolutely. Where things go wrong, I would say, is when we're given information that isn't accurate. And the best way to navigate it is to be truthful. The residents have a seasoned professional working with them through the due diligence, so we're going to discover anything that that might be out there to be discovered. And we just encourage owners to be pretty honest and upfront, and we can work through almost any challenge. We have come across some crazy ones, as I'm sure you have, Frank, and we're able to navigate it pretty well. I would say, you know, residents have one shot at this. There's no guarantee that the next owner is going to give them an opportunity to purchase their community. So they tend to look very thoroughly, take an honest look at the property, but they want to get to the closing table. They're not going through this process to be another tire kicker. They're going through this process to get to the closing table so that they can own the land under their homes. So yeah, I just ask owners to be pretty candid with us and we can be candid back. It can be a really great working relationship and we can navigate almost any hurdle as long as we're navigating it together.
Okay, well now let's change around to the typical traits that make a deal possible for the residents to purchase through RockUSA. And let's break it down into the five categories that we use at boot camp. So let's start first with infrastructure. What infrastructure issues will make these properties impossible to do? Are there any kinds of private sewer, private water, master meter gas, or electricity? Or can you do non-paved roads? What are the things that right off the bat make it very unlikely you can get it done?
So we can handle any type of infrastructure. Within the resident-owned community portfolio, we have private, wells, we have septic systems, we have community systems, we have city water, city sewer, direct build city water, city sewer, sub-metered utilities, you name it. So I'd say that there's pretty much nothing that we want to say no to. We encourage every park owner to go ahead and give us a call because we want to take a look at every deal. And we will give the park owner a pretty quick no if we don't think it's something that we can move forward on, and then they can go out elsewhere to find a buyer. So they're really on the infrastructure side. I'd say that, again, we can navigate almost anything.
Okay, and then what about on the density side? How dense is too dense? Obviously, North Lamar itself was not the least dense community of all time, although it still had a nice, spacious feel. The lots were not enormously deep. Are there any certain things to watch out for that would preclude a property from qualifying on a density, space between homes, units per acre, anything you see there that might hold someone back?
Again, I would say that on a density level, there's nothing that we don't want to take a look at. North Lamar was pretty dense. We have communities that are on, four homes to an acre, and everything in between. One of the things we will look into during that process is, are there any restrictions to replacing homes? Should one be removed or taken out? And that will just factor into our conversation around, planning for future infill and future development. But as far as on the purchase side, again, there's no density restrictions or limits that are not ideal for resident-owned community.
Okay, let's move into economics. At what point is a deal too small? What price point is a deal, either by price point or number of lots, too small to qualify? And then what is like the sweet spot of deal size that RockUSA mostly deals on? Is there a minimum, and then is there like one that's like the most common, or how does that work?
Yep. So RockUSA Capital does have a 25 site minimum as well as $1 million minimum. With that being said, in some of the more rural areas such as Montana or Eastern Washington, we have closed on smaller communities. If they're going to be smaller than 25 sites, then we want to take a hard look at, we're probably leaning toward city-owned utilities to limit the amount of maintenance dollars that need to go into private utilities. And if it is less than $1 million, we can bring in local banks in order to provide the financing necessary. So I would say 25 sites is really the smallest that RockUSA Capital will take a look at. But if there is something smaller and it's within it's close to the affiliate's office, we're willing to look at it with a closer eye, just understanding that we'll have to go out and secure other financing.
And for clarification, for those people who say, "No, wait a minute, how big is North Lamar?" North Lamar is, was it 68 lots, right. So it's not like North Lamar was giant. In fact, if you look at the three we've done with you, I don't know what Clark's Grove size. I can't recall how big it was. But in other words, if you're listening to this and saying, oh, well, my property is not big enough for Rock USA, that's not true. Is if you're, yes, if your community has 10 lots, yeah, you're probably too small, although I guess 10 lots in Los Angeles would still qualify, because 10 lots in Los Angeles is more than $1 million. But in general, you guys are pretty flexible in size, correct?
Yeah, Clark's Grove. Sorry, Angela, I was just going to answer Frank's question. So Clark's Grove transaction in Minnesota that the co-op acquired with our assistance was 96 homes. In La Crosse, Wisconsin, that was 57 homes. And that actually, along with North Lamar, so our average size transaction is just about 75 homes, just under $3 million. So really the larger communities, frankly, are easier to transact on many fronts. And so for listeners, Angela laid out the low end of the spectrum. We have done large transactions, over 400 site communities, nearly $30 million on a single transaction. We've done portfolios of smaller communities bundled together. There's like any buyer, there's some economies of scale here, and certainly interested in looking at average size and larger properties all the time.
Gotcha. And then as far as age of homes, just one component where you're probably more or less have a less difficult time than some buyers, because the whole purpose of this is to make people both homeowners of their home, but also of the land. So is age of home an issue? In other words, if the home is predominantly homes from the 70s and the 80s, because North Lamar is mostly of that vintage, is that an issue, or is there a certain number of new homes you have to have? Is there a certain number of double wides you have to have? Or how does the actual home product inside the property, how does that matter?
We take communities where they are, from where they are, Frank. So one of the criteria in terms of our buy box, this is an ownership model that is geared towards homeowners. So one of the considerations for us is, what is the percentage of owner-occupied homes in a community? And really, we want to see that north of 75% owner-occupied. And with that, we want to see homeowners that demonstrate a level of investment for their homes, even if they're older homes. And I have some friends and members in co-ops that are in 1960 vintage homes that are really well maintained, and they would not trade those out for any of these newfangled manufactured homes. And that's well and fine. So that's where really, this is a home ownership model and believing in this housing stock. If you invest in it and care for it, this housing stock is resilient.
Gotcha. And then on the location side, how many states do you now do total?
We have co-ops in 17 states. We have two other states, North Carolina and California, with letters of intent and purchase contracts. So that'll be 19. And then we actually serve some additional states where we have yet to see a transaction. Iowa is a great example of that. Our affiliate in Minnesota is actively looking at communities in Iowa now, and a little bit in the eastern Dakotas as well. But Iowa is their third state where they want to be active.
Gotcha. So on the location side, if a property would be applicable, it has to be in a state that you serve, which is easy to find out. From contacting, you can tell them which states. As far as, you've got you've got several styles of communities out there. You have the gritty urban one in the heart of town, which is what I would consider North Lamar to be. And clearly that model's fine, because you close North Lamar. Mm-hmm. And so gritty urban is okay, right? In the heart of town stuff, that's good.
Absolutely. We'd love to look at stuff in the heart of town. We have one in the Salt Lake City and metro area as well. And it's great to be able to secure the housing in those areas.
Gotcha. And then you've got the upscale suburban. Oh, I'm sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
Well, that's you're going the same place I'm going. So on the other end of the spectrum, Frank, in Plymouth, Massachusetts, we have a community where homes sell in the mid-300s. These are all multi-section homes with site-built garages on 4-foot concrete foundations with a swimming pool and a community center. Most you wouldn't, but many people would drive in and think it's a subdivision, but it is a quote mobile home park, a resident-owned community, and they were delighted to have the opportunity to purchase that property because if you're invested to the tune of $300,000 in your house, you want control of the land under your home.
Absolutely. And then what about the third component that I see, and I know that you guys see when you're out driving around, which are these communities in more rural areas where the only thing in town seems to be, you know, the Dairy Queen and the gas station and a few other items. Do you all even delve into that kind of really rural product, or is that typically not something you would have an interest in?
Have you been to Haver, Montana, Frank?
Not recently, no.
I was there last fall. Actually, I spent a day in the Great Falls airport last winter because I was snowed in and couldn't get a flight out of Great Falls after visiting Haver, which is a two-hour shot north of Great Falls, Montana, on your way to Canada. So, what's interesting about Haver is it's a college town, and I sat down with the board of directors there, and lo and behold, these were several of them graduates of the local university. One was a nurse, one was an electrician, they had the opportunity to purchase their community, and they did. And it's actually kind of a cool town. They talk about it as for that area where people want to live, and they had no interest in moving any place outside of Haver, Montana. So there's good, important, affordable housing work to be done in small rural towns, and we're happy to be there when the homeowners are motivated.
Okay, so it sounds like if I take all these dots and connect them, basically, if someone has a property that's in a state that you serve, and it's roughly about 25 lots, although even then not set in stone, and larger, then it's a potential player, and if they're interested, they should contact you, and you can then tell them based on the granular details whether it might work or not, but not to feel excluded from the program, as long as they're basically in the state you serve, and of roughly 25 lots and bigger. Would that be correct?
Yeah, and I think even states we don't serve, call Angela, be in touch. You might be thinking a few years down the road. We are getting demand to be in more states than we're able to be in at this point. You know, we have to, grow and expand as best we can, but demand exceeds our capacity here. But we'd love to be, in relationship and hearing about opportunities in states that we don't serve. And we won't forget about you if you don't forget about us. And we'll just, try to be there when you're ready to sell.
The residents have a community in North Carolina under contract right now. And that is a great example of a community owner who reached out to me probably 2 years ago now. We've just sort of stayed in touch. And he wasn't planning on selling at this point, but things changed and now he needed to sell. And it just so happened that we were expanding into North Carolina. So we absolutely welcome those calls from states that we're not in, and we'll stay in touch, and we can make a deal happen when we're going to be entering that market. So we encourage those calls.
Gotcha. And now let's revisit the time frame again. So if someone says, hey, I'm interested in this concept, what is the time frame again? So in other words, so from Hello Rock USA to, the moment you get something under contract, how long does it take typically? What's the range now in the post-COVID world of completing a transaction at this point?
Yeah, so from the moment that an owner reaches out to Rock USA to the point that we're under contract, that goes as quickly as the two of us make that happen. So as soon as financials are disclosed and we can come to a mutual agreed upon price, that can happen in a matter of days if everyone is kind of operating on the same wavelength there. Once we're under contract, we like to see 15 to 30 days to meet with the residents and see if they're going to form that corporation and take assignment of the contract. Once they've taken up, so that 15 to 30 days is to assign the contract. From there, we like to see 60 days for due diligence, another 30 days for financing, and we can either, and then we can get to closing shortly thereafter. So we're closing these from beginning to end in a matter of usually 120 days. But once the residents take assignment, it's usually 90 days.
All right. And guys, let's talk for a minute about the industry. Because Paul, I know you've been in it since the 80s. I've been in it since the 90s. I'm not sure when Angela got in it, but obviously it's changed a lot over the decades that we've all been in it. So where do you see this thing heading? Let me ask you the first question, which is, what do we even call what we do? What do you think is the right name for the product? I mean, I like the affordable housing name. Never really liked mobile home park, manufactured home community, because that is the focus is then too much on the actual dwelling unit or the product. I feel like a manufacturer when I use those terms, but I'm not a manufacturer. I'm a community person. So is affordable housing or should it just be housing? What do you guys think the name should be of what we do?
Well, I think a couple of things, Frank, I don't know about the mobile home park per se. I was at my mother's community the other day. Now, my mom bought a new Clayton product 2 years ago, $71 per square foot turnkey for a multi-section Energy Star rated home. Absolutely beautiful. Unparalleled, really, in the single family market. But long story short, my mother encouraged me to drive past her place down the street in the co-op because there was a, quote, new trailer that just moved in. And so here's my mother having just acquired a new manufactured home, calling the new home down the street a trailer. Be that as it may, for these communities, you know, we've obviously branded these as resident-owned communities, emphasizing the resident ownership and the community aspect. I think, so to my mind, community plays a key role in this. One of the great benefits of owning a home in a community is the density, frankly. You know, really detached single-family homes that are modest size with small private yards is a tremendous resource as affordable housing and as a consumer preference. People like four walls. They don't that aren't connected to somebody else's wall, and they like small yards. And other benefit of manufactured home communities is, frankly, you have a driveway. As a general rule, you can park right next to your entryway. So tremendous advantages. You know. So you hear me talk about home ownership and homeowners because I ultimately believe this is an affordable home ownership product and this one of its great strengths is that low income families, retirees can acquire an affordable home and to me that's the strength of this and it's one of the I think you would agree one of the great strengths of the community business is the fact that people own their homes and have a level of investment in those homes. We're looking to expand on that investment, obviously, and bring greater security to that home ownership. But that's at the core of it for me, affordable home ownership.
Agreed.
And let me ask you this. You guys are considered to be kind of on the cutting edge of the industry. You're one of the few new ideas that's been successful. I know it's not brand new. I know it goes back to the 80s, but it wasn't done on a huge scale until more recent times. And so a lot of young people entering the industry, millennials and a lot of others, they view you guys with high esteem because you're doing something that's unusual and they like the win-win aspect. Where else do you see the industry going as far as the future? Are there any other things? I mean, you're probably seeing on the part of all community owners now, people trying to enhance the sense of community. We've been pouring lots of money into enhancing amenities, other items. We just brought out a every community newsletter. I mean, where do you see things going? What are some new ideas you see that you're saying, wow, that was a good idea, or that's neato? I mean, I have people call me all the time, wanting to develop, for example, brand new ground up tiny home developments. I know there's one of those in Austin. But I mean, what futuristic things, since you guys are kind of the astronauts of the future to many people, what other futuristic astronauts do you see out there?
Well, one of the encouraging things that I see, Frank, is we've brought, the industry has attracted a lot of young, very smart people. A lot of these folks coming into the business come from a finance background. And what's interesting to me is, of course, they understand finance, no question about that. But they also have a respect for brand. And I think that's something that perhaps some folks that grew up in this business with as much gray hair as I have and older, never really thought much about brand. And the fact of the matter is brand is everything. So if your community, the reputation of your community, the reputation of the industry really matters. In this digital world where information flows so quickly, it's a democratic information system. You've got to be very careful about brand, and consumers are wise, right? So I'm encouraged that the community sector is understanding the power of the internet and the importance of brand in terms of how they position their property and how they serve their customers. I've been a big believer that ultimately industries thrive when the customer enjoys a strong value proposition. I think you see that in industry after industry, and I think our industry is due for a little greater dose of that if we're interested in the sector as a whole and growing the sector, which I hope we are, because I think obviously I'm a believer. I helped my mom in her downsizing buy a new HUD code manufactured home. And as I said, untouchable in the detached single family housing market at $71 per square foot turnkey, fabulous. So there's so much opportunity here, but I think we got to really respect the need to build a strong value proposition. And I think we do that through really attention to brand.
Great points. What do you see as far as trying to keep communities? For example, North Lamar, as you know, was right on the edge of the wrecking ball when we bought it. I drive by communities all the time that fell the other way and are under the wrecking ball. It was just in a large one in Indiana that they, I guess, are redeveloping into a Home Depot, and everyone got evictions notices. It's absolute anarchy. Some people had abandoned their homes. Some people had erected giant signs in the yards, cussing out the new owner, the old owner. What I know there have been has been discussion about, for example, favorable tax treatment if a community owner elects to not redevelop but leave as a community. You see any of that happening? I mean, I know I think Keith Ellison proposed it a couple of years ago, never went anywhere. Do you think at some point some of that will get traction? So the government itself, I know you guys are doing everything you can to make community owners owned by the residents. Do you see a point which the government will also step in and get a little help to keep maintaining these things rather than having them redeveloped?
Yeah, it's interesting. So there are some tax incentives in a few states for sales to cooperatives, to the homeowners, and so that's a related point to your question, but not really the answer to your direct question. Interesting, would there be a property tax abatement or exemption, for retaining a community as a community? I haven't seen that anywhere, Frank. I haven't seen it discussed, and maybe I don't listen to enough of your blogs, and I apologize for that. If it's something you've been promoting, but it is an interesting thought, and to me, it does come back to overall, as a sector, really repositioning the sector in the eyes of the public officials specifically, but more broadly in the eyes of the public. And then I think taking a rightful place in the affordable housing segment would be possible. And I know that's a 30,000 foot answer to a very direct question, but I think until we come to grips with some of the challenges that homeowners face, like the community closure, you know, which I think is right at really sort of the worst risk of all, right? If you own a home and then you in Indiana, it's noteworthy. In Indiana this year, I think there was a legislator proposing doubling the notice to quit period for a community closure. I was shocked to learn that the existing notice to quit period was 30 days. So the doubling would be simply to 60 days. Imagine, you know, owning a home and receive as a low income person and getting 30 or 60 days even that you needed to relocate that home, knowing how difficult that is, challenging for us. Imagine being a, you know, low income person or family being faced with that. So I think we've got to really think through how do we, as a sector, how do we create greater security for homeowners in communities? And in so doing, the upside is that it changes the dialogue with public officials, and maybe it opens up opportunities like you're raising now.
All right, and if someone's interested in talking with RockUSA more about the potential of selling their community to the residents, how's the best way to reach you guys? They contact Angela, or what does someone do? If you listen to this and say, ooh, I want to get more information on my community, what do they do?
Best thing to do is visit. Oh, sorry, Angela. we're always online at rocusa.org. So I encourage people to go to rocusa.org. There's contact information there, and you're welcome to always visit rockusa.org for a whole host of information, including that seller testimonial I described. And then Angela can provide her direct contact information.
Yeah, so my phone number is 603-545-1704, and folks can give me a call or reach out to me at aromeo@rocusa.org.
Perfect. Well, you know, again, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to be with us, because it's an option that many community owners do not know is out there. It's a very pure win-win option. I think that was proven with North Lamar, but again, North Lamar was our third transaction with you, not the first. And in all three cases, it went smoothly, it went successfully, residents were very happy, and it kind of went full circle, kind of a Disney ending in all three cases, where the residents not only ended up owning the homes, but the land underneath. And, you know, I like the fact that you guys are bringing kind of a fresh perspective, a win-win perspective, to an industry that always needs new, fresh ideas, because, you know, the industry is at this point about a half a century old and often stuck in its ways. And it's great having new options come out that people may or may not be aware of that help advance the entire idea of having a happy resident base and a sense of community. And I know you all are doing a lot of good for residents all over the U.S. Every time you close a deal, they basically get the Disney ending of owning the land under their home, and I think everyone is well pleased with that. And we hope we can include you in some more dialogues and discussions in the future, because I think it's an important item, more so than ever before, that everyone talk and give you know, very serious discussion and thoughts to how to make these communities more successful, of the higher value for everybody, and try and place them in the right spot as the stewards of many, many families and their housing future. So again, we really appreciate you being here with us tonight. And we also appreciate everyone for attending this with us. And again, if you have any questions or thoughts regarding your community and RockUSA, definitely reach out to Angela and Nepal. They are great about getting back with people, very good on response time. They've done enough of these transactions. They can give you an extremely accurate picture whether your property would work for that. And so, again, we just thank everyone for being here, spending some time with us, listening to our discussion, and we'll be back again with everyone again soon. So thanks a lot, everybody. Have a good night.